Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, that's right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another special edition, WrestleMania edition of the Absolute Truth Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, with the most, the King of King himself. I am the Hot Rod. And on the phone line, I have the reigning, undisputed, heavyweight piece of crap and running on God Green's earth. I give you the one, the only, Sean Black.
Yes, Sean Black, in the building, once again. Yes, I am here.
Wow. All right. Sean and I decided, you know what, there's too much going on in this world today. We need some type of distraction, you know. And you know what? This weekend is a WrestleMania weekend. Starting from tomorrow night, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and Tuesday. So the next 5 nights is nothing but wrestling. So Sean Black and I are like, you know what? Why not? Let's talk about wrestling, you know. We do it almost every day. So entertain our two listeners right now, you know. let's talk about something else besides getting smacked by somebody, you know, by you know who. But before we start, Sean Black, there's two things. You have a busy weekend yourself coming up. Do you like to plug that in right now?
Yes, I'll plug two shows that I'm glad to, one to be a part of and another one that I like to listen to. First show I'm going to plug is Morton Law's podcast, which is, I've plugged before, a very good friend of mine, Christopher Morton, does his own podcast on anchor.fm. The link is anchor.fm/Morton. Dash Law, Morton's Dash Law. That is the actual site that he has everything you would want to listen to, sports, wrestling, et cetera. He also has, as I've said before, a warped sense of humor, but he's genuinely a good guy, and he has a lot of things that he wants to get off of his chest. So listen to that podcast as well. And also the other podcast that I actually do, I'm a co-host of with my partner, the phenomenal one, Saturday afternoon's main event. That's this Saturday. And we're going to be doing 2 hours on Saturday of WrestleMania predictions, et cetera, because WrestleMania weekend is really big. It's a Saturday and a Sunday like they did last year. It's on YouTube, Saturday afternoon's main event on YouTube. Go ahead on there and check that site out.
And yes, ladies and gentlemen, as me, as Sean Black will be doing new shows, I will be on the YouTube also myself. They talk about Sean Black's wife all day long, if you know what I mean. So let's go on with the show.
Lord.
What? I killed myself.
Yeah, well, he had to squeeze that one in, right?
Of course. Talk about squeezing. Vince McMahon is trying to squeeze all these matches into 2 nights, but it's really 3 nights. Sean Black and I, we talk about wrestling almost every day, like I said, and Friday night, tomorrow night is WrestleMania week on SmackDown, because right after SmackDown is the Hall of Fame with the great Undertaker, Steiner Brothers, Queen, I don't know why, Charmel is in it, and Vader. Congratulations to them. They'll be in the Hall of Fame tomorrow. I might miss somebody else, but it doesn't matter because tomorrow night is about Taker. But
yes.
Sean Black, we have the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. We have Ricochet defending his IC belt as far as a great show for SmackDown tomorrow. And like I told you before the show, this is like a pre-show on Friday Night SmackDown. And before, for many years, they would have to do the pre-show on the day of WrestleMania at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, like a 2-hour pre-show. Do you think it was a smart strategy for Vince McMahon to do a pre-show on live television? or should I have kept the tradition and leave it on a Saturday and Sunday night?
Well, if you think about what Vince did, the Andre the Giant Battle Royal is usually on the day of WrestleMania. They started putting it on television last year. They did that last year with the Battle Royal. They're doing it again this year. There are a lot of questionable things that we've seen Vince McMahon do as far as booking goes within how he cultivates this card. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm kind of surfing around that until we circle back to it. But literally, the reason why I say
don't
that.
Don't raise my blood pressure, okay? Don't raise my blood pressure, please.
I will try to keep it as cool as possible. But basically, what we've seen are not only questionable booking questions from what this card is supposed to be, from WrestleMania being usually a one-night, all-encompassing event where you would have the NXT show taking on the night before WrestleMania, and then you would have WrestleMania itself that Sunday. It's no longer that way now because WrestleMania is encompassing the entire weekend. You're going to have the NXT Stand and Deliver show, which would normally be called an NXT TakeOver show, the same day. So with that being done, with all that wrestling and all of the pomp and circumstance of the way the card is, to put some of those matches on the pre-show that would be on the pre-show and putting it on free television, I guess is a way to entice people to either watch the show or if there are still tickets available, because whether or not people realize this or not, WrestleMania is still not sold out. And they are in Jerry World, which is AT&T Stadium, the billion-dollar playpen that's down there in Dallas, and they still have not redone everything the way it should be as far as sell the tickets and get all of the attention that you would expect.
And with that, you just brought up to my next major question. You know, I know you didn't finish your point about the stadium, about selling out. But last time they were there 3 years ago, it sold out and broke records because we all know your WWE love attendance records. They love to break it every time they go to a venue. So it was last time was the biggest of all time with 100 people. Oh, excuse me, not 100 people, 100,000.
Yeah, though, yeah, that would be a record, probably in the opposite direction.
Yeah, exactly. But do you think, like you said, we'd be shocked if it's get close to sold out. But if they don't sell out both events, Saturday or Sunday, do you think it was a failure to Vince McMahon?
I think as long as he can get between 75 and 80,000 people in the stadium for both nights apiece, he's pulling in about 150 to 160,000 paying fans for the show, then I think he would look at it as somewhat of a success. That based on the fact that usually when the WWE books a huge arena, because remember, WrestleMania usually started the going into it was into the wrestling cities and going into the arenas that were there, like the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago, Madison Square Garden in New York, or going to Vegas, which they've only done one other time, which was WrestleMania 9, going to cities. Now they're going into stadiums. And those stadiums will usually sell out or come close to selling out just on the name of WrestleMania. And because of the way things have been over the last couple of years, either because of change in viewing habits, the product not being the same as it used to be, as you heard me complain about in our conversation.
Oh,
and let's really be honest.
That's the next topic.
Yes. COVID has changed a lot of people. Yes. COVID has changed a lot of people's viewing habits. And if for those that look at WWE wrestling, and we know we went through the pandemic era where they weren't wrestling in arenas that had people. They were wrestling in an arena that had a lot of television screens and people hooked up to watching it, the network, and going
Remember, it was a Thunderdome back then.
Yes.
Last year.
So, exactly. So now they're coming back from this. It's been over a year, about a year. I believe it's been since June that they came back to the live arenas. It's been since about June. I think it was the first week in June that they came back and had the opening.
No, remember, they came back to Money in the Bank before.
Yes, Money in the Bank. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So they did WrestleMania. They did WrestleMania in Tampa in front of half of the stadium. And then that was kind of the precursor for a couple of months later to show people we can actually go ahead and do this on a full-time basis. But it's been roughly between – it's been about 6 to 8 months that they've been back with full stadiums with full crowds.
Yeah, but
the product is not where
point,
it should
to last, no, but to last year, we understood why they did two nights at Tampa Bay. Well, Tampa Bay was the original plan back in 2020 to host WrestleMania until COVID shut it down. So they're coming back to Tampa, unfortunately the same year that they won the Super Bowl, but that's a whole different show for another night. But we understand why they did that for a two-night affair. You know, we get our fans back, and you want to give the fans the opportunity to witness, to experience WrestleMania, you know. And I'm sure that gives Vince the idea of, wow, I'm going to do this for two nights. Let's do it again next year in 2022. And here we are now in Dallas. Now, are they being too greedy, I believe? Yes. But I love the concept they brought up to me last week was, now we're going about how garbage the product is right now. Sean Black and I have called each other almost every night criticizing SmackDown. And you know what? I can speak for Sean Black. He's not judgmental as me. You know, sometimes we text each other. That was a good match. That was a good segment. But when our product is garbage, we call each other and say, the product is garbage. And lately, WWE, including WrestleMania, is not what is. I understand things change, but not what it used to be anymore. But the creativity, the product, it's just garbage right now overall. Like Sean Black, are you in WrestleMania mode yet?
I'm in sort of WrestleMania mode. Usually, and this is something
that
we've done over the decades that we've known each other. That we would look at something and there would be like a match, an interview, a segment, a feud, a championship. That's like, okay, I'm ready for WrestleMania. This is something that I've told anybody, exactly. Anybody that has known me or that knows me that in all of the time that I've been a wrestling fan, I compare every WrestleMania as far as build and hype to WrestleMania 3. Now, that's going back to 1987. Hogan, Andre, Steamboat, and Savage. That's what I compare a build for. When I say, okay, this has the build of this, and maybe that's in my nostalgic looking back at WrestleMania 3. Who knows? But if you can build the attention for me to be intrigued in that, then I am all there. I'm not fully feeling that right now. And there are maybe two or three matches that actually have my attention in that same way, but it's not the same.
Okay. We're talking about a product overall. Why WrestleMania, we will talk about the matches in a bit, but why is that the same right now? Because so I'm Black, I'll give you the first hand at this. Why the product, the creativity, McMahon, WrestleMania is not the same right now?
The product is not the same because Vincent Kennedy McMahon literally got rid of
Hold on. Watch your mouth there. Watch your mouth.
Yes.
Watch your mouth. Don't go there. Don't go there.
Government name. But Vince McMahon and lots of people have railed on. This has been going on for the last 2 years of cutting, releasing so many talented wrestlers that literally you could build two wrestling promotions with the amount of wrestlers that were cut that ended up in another promotion, in AEW, in Ring of Honor, in Impact Wrestling, in Major League Wrestling, in CZW. There are a multitude of wrestling promotions that are out there, including New Japan, that some of these wrestlers were plucked away from.
Excuse me, not to cut you off. To your point, before I forget, Toni Storm, that was recently cut. She's in AEW now. She may have to be Wednesday night, right?
Correct. And it's lots of names of wrestlers that have shown up on the card that would have been in your Andre the Giant Battle Royal, that would have been in some of the other matches that you could have had to spread along some of the talent. And as we've said before, one of the problems that we've seen in WWE is a propensity to book a lot of the same matches over and over again. When you have a feud
between
a couple of wrestlers, when you build wrestling matches and wrestling feuds, true, you're going to have wrestler A versus wrestler B. They're going to have a feud. We want to build that feud up for a six-month run. But you also don't want the feud to get stale. They may have a great first match. They may even have a great interaction in how you book them. Oh, this person doesn't like this person. Something happened storyline-wise that created some sort of conflict. They get into that pay-per-view. They have that match. What ends up happening here is the lazy way of booking and having those same guys that are in that feud wrestle or come in contact with each other every week. It's a rematch after rematch after rematch, but it's booked in a different match. And then it's a rematch here. It's a tag team match. Oh, it's a rematch. It's a triple threat match. But and then you kind of fizzle out the feud.
Remember a few weeks ago, ladies and gentlemen, I'll never forget on a Friday night watching SmackDown, I called Sean Black up and I asked him, is this a repeat of the show? You know, he started bursting out laughing because, like, and I was dead serious because it was the same type of segments, same type of matches, same type of talk. I thought I was watching a repeated show. And that's from Sean's point. It's like, it's the same thing over and over. Why? Once again, they cut over 100 wrestlers within a year to save $1 billion. Go figure.
Yes. Think about this for those that may not be full wrestling fans. AEW basically built a good chunk of their roster off of a lot of the wrestlers that the WWE either could not keep under contract or had under contract and didn't know what to do with. So you've lost a great deal of depth in building out your roster, and then you don't have the strength that you would have in the undercard that you can build. You also don't have the younger guys that you want to build that can then become future stars because Vince McMahon doesn't see those wrestlers in that light. And he's one of those type of people that if I can't make anything with you, then what's the purpose of me keeping you there? Unless it's to hoard all of the talent because you're afraid that the competition may actually do something with them. And that was what was happening over these last 2.5 years between WWE and AEW. Now that AEW has pretty much established itself as legitimate competition, although they are far from perfect, as I have applauded AEW, but I have also railed on AEW and certain things that they've done as far as booking and the way their referees are and some of the things that they've done. They had a great pay-per-view 3 weeks ago at Revolution, and then the show following the pay-per-view was not good at all.
God.
So those are the kinds of things that they have to get over, but those are growing pains. That's something that you would hope that as they learn as a young company to build past, get rid of, as they say, get rid of the chaff. You separate the chaff from the wheat, and then you make sure that you can go ahead and you can bake bread with what you have. That's something that can be corrected. WWE is on autopilot. They are literally what I would call, it, and I've said this before, they're creatively bankrupt. That's something that they will always do until they can actually look at the talent that they have and do something different.
Can you explain that a little bit more creatively? Can you explain that logic a little bit more?
Creatively bankrupt is when, for those that don't know the vernacular of wrestling, or for those that do, if you are a wrestling fan, you know that wrestling has a lot of compelling storylines. You build a feud, and then that feud builds, and then you can make money off of it by having rematches, booking them for pay-per-views. The creativity part of it has to come from doing something that is not the same old, same old. There are tropes, and there are certain themes that wrestlers and wrestling fans are accustomed to seeing that works. You just have to present it differently and do it in a way that works so that it doesn't come out the same. What WWE tends to do is this carbon copy thing where they take a lot of the same stuff and then they just roll it out without any real creativity, and then it doesn't seem to work as efficiently as it should. That's where they're creatively bad.
Right, okay, either I have a listener or a caller right now, 6606. You are on the air.
Yeah, I know. You unmuted me. I just wanted to wait until Sean Black was finished so that I could find out what that was. Who?
We're talking about wrestling. What? We're talking about wrestling, Joe.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm here. I'm saying to myself, these guys usually have a very serious topic, and talking about wrestling and creative bankruptcy. For me, it's surprising that the WWE or any of the wrestling organizations can actually be in existence, because you've got to really have a suspension of disbelief to watch them, and especially to pay money for pay-per-view. It's all entertainment. They admitted it years ago. And, isn't it amazing how when they go into battle, quote-unquote, they always finish the battle right before a commercial, and then they go back to battle again.
The funniest thing about that is that they kind of changed that up, where now they'll wrestle, and they now show you in picture-in-picture so that you don't leave. Usually the whole thing is, it's 2 minutes selling and 2 minutes bringing it back in. What they're going to do now is we're going to keep you there through the commercials by having the matches continue through the commercial break by showing you what's going on live on television. So they have you going and coming.
Well, I lost interest in wrestling years. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I can't hear you.
So you used to watch wrestling back in them days? Do you used to watch wrestling back in them days?
Yeah. I remember Gorilla Monsoon. Okay.
Wow. That's what, 1980s we're talking about? Early 90s?
Yeah. So that was, he's the guy that said that Hulk Hogan wouldn't know the difference between a wrist lock and a wrist watch. And Hulk Hogan,
I think that was Bobby
hell
the Brain.
Of a,
I think that was Bobby the Brain eating. Really did not say that. That was Bobby the Brain. Yes. Okay, but this is what
I saw Gorilla. I heard Gorilla Monsoon say it. I saw him say it. It wasn't Bobby the Brain. Well, he might have said it, but the guy I saw was Gorilla Monsoon.
Okay, well, tonight is a little bit lighter topic for Sean Black and I to talk about wrestling. So. Intrigued by it.
I'm not intrigued by wrestling. I'm intrigued by you two guys talking about it, because, like I said, you two guys usually talk about, deeper, heavier subjects. So, I guess it's time for, something for entertainment. There's nothing, there's hardly any difference between wrestling and what happened between Will Smith and Chris Rock. So why not?
I have seen plenty of memes that have kind of tried to bring that in. As a matter of fact, watching wrestling this week, we've actually seen wrestling fans with signs alluding to that. So
is that right?
It's funny how wrestling and real life seems to always kind of interact on some level, even if it's very on the lower level or on a on a kind of subconscious level, somewhere it's linked up somewhere.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, you know, there was a conflict on the stage. You didn't know what was going on. I mean, between Smith and Rock, you didn't know what was really going on. You didn't expect it. You kind of expected it when you saw him walking up there, but you didn't really know until he slapped him. And then there's controversy about whether or not he actually slapped him. And if he did, was it staged? And then that also begs the question, was it staged with these two guys, or was Hollywood in on it? So, I mean, yeah, there's controversy surrounding that, you know, and it, just like when, I forget that guy's name that slapped, the Libertarian guy, he sued them, and then he, as a result of the lawsuit, Vince McMahon had to admit that wrestling was all entertainment.
Oh, Bob Costas?
No, who?
You talking about Bob Costas, an interview with Vince McMahon?
No, not Bob Costas. It's the Libertarian guy. He has a show about Libertarian viewpoints. I don't know if he still has it on, but, oh, Jesus. It keeps going in and out of my tongue. Anyway, you know. So, I remember what.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I remember when I was going to college, there were a couple of brothers, actual brothers, bloodline brothers, who were in the same class as me, and they were getting, you know, A's and B's. They were getting good GPAs and everything, and they swore that wrestling was real. They just swore it.
It is real.
They just, what?
No, it is real. The storyline,
what do you mean?
Think, but the moves are real. Right, Sean?
I think the definition you're looking for is predetermined, which is we know how everything is going to potentially finish, all of that stuff. But the in-ring stuff, the physicality of that stuff is about as real as people running on a soccer pitch or throwing a football getting tackled. And I think that people that look at wrestling that either don't understand the fascination of why people would want to watch that, or those that look at it in the sense of, wow, this either looks quote-unquote phony, or, wow, these guys are really athletic beings doing X, Y, and Z. Now, maybe how you get from point A to point B may be predetermined, but everything in the middle,
of course,
is just as real as a lot of the other stuff. There are literally graveyards full of wrestlers who have done things to themselves in the ring for the sake of people that actually think that what they do is quote-unquote fake. So there's the argument.
Well,
Joe,
yeah,
Go ahead, Joe.
I think Sean is right in that they are athletic specimens. I mean, you can't grow to be 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", weigh 245 pounds, weigh that, and look like that. Without steroids, number one. And, yeah, they're very athletic. I mean, the way they throw each other onto the canvas and pick themselves up and do it again, you know, week after week. Yeah. But, yeah, and because it's predetermined, it's also fake. It's also there for entertainment. So
the bump and bruises are real. They really do hurt.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's what people do not understand. It's just like football. One false move, you know, you can suffer.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. And there have been wrestlers who've been out of action for a while because of these nasty bumps or slips and falls that they take.
When the choreography goes awry, yeah, you're going to suffer that. So, yeah, it takes an athletic specimen. It takes an athlete to really engage in that. But there are people who believe that it's not predetermined, that everything that goes on there is not scripted, that it is real. And
I hate to bring this up, but you brought it up earlier. Do you think the Will Smith slap was scripted, was staged? I have to ask.
Oh, me? I don't think so. But I do lend to the possibility that it might. I don't, you know, anything can happen in Hollywood. But I don't think so. I think Will Smith, Will Smith did it to restore his manhood. What I didn't know until I talked to somebody the other day. Yeah. What she was saying, see, I didn't see this because I wasn't watching the Oscars. I didn't even know it was on, probably, because they've lost my attention span a long time ago.
Joe, why are you lying to us right now? You are lying to us. You know damn well you were sitting down in your popcorn watching the Oscars. You know damn well.
You do you have to tell people my secrets there, Hot Rod? Huh?
I have to.
No, I didn't even know about it. I actually forgot all about it. Mm. But the thing is that when I saw it on YouTube, and then I heard somebody's explanation about Jada Smith rolled her eyes at the joke, didn't like it. Will Smith liked the joke. He kind of chuckled at the joke. He looked over at Jada. She looks at him like, what the fuck are you laughing at him for? He says to himself, uh-oh, even though I have this relationship where I'm allowing my wife to fuck everybody and anybody, she is mad at me, and I got to restore my manhood. So I think he goes up there, and he hits a little guy. You know, how big is Chris Rock? About 5'9", 5'8", something like that?
Yeah, give or take, yeah.
Yeah, and he smacks him. And he smacks him on an international stage, okay, where 90 countries are watching in a venue where this is supposed to be a very stoic event. You know, you're supposed to cheer and clap. Yeah, when somebody gets an award, but you don't go nuts like you're at a concert. And here goes Will Smith up there smacking the shit out of this guy. I don't think it was staged. Some people do. I can't say that it wasn't. You know, oh, and another thing, too.
Okay.
There was supposed to have been Will Smith, video of Will Smith teaching how to slap about an hour before the Oscars went on.
Yes. No, there is a video of him teaching a kid in a school, I believe, of how to slap someone. And, of course, as we surfaced on the Internet, what Sean and I discussed yesterday, and we both agreed, that had nothing to do with what happened at the Oscars, you know. I'm like, it seemed like it had something to do with it, but no. He was teaching the kids how to get slapped and how to, you know, act like you got slapped. Because trust me, I slap Sean Black all the time when I see him in real life. But Sean Black.
Keep dreaming.
That's all I can say. Right, Sean, he's lying again.
Okay, but you know what? But Crazy Joe. I told Sean Black overall, I mean, people blame Chris Rock, people blame Will Smith. I blame Jada for this mess. She's the corporate in all this. Do you think this is Jada's fault overall?
I don't think it's Jada's fault. I don't think of her as a good wife. I don't even know if I can call her a real woman, because if she's going to marry somebody and yet poke the babysitter or poke a friend of the family, and he allows it, he goes out and does the same thing, and they go to swingers clubs. That's not a real marriage. So
but
I don't blame her.
Huh? It's an open relationship. So it's an open relationship. They both agreed to it. So not like this. Can we really call that cheating?
No, I don't call it cheating. I call it a lack of intimacy. I don't call it a relationship. Actually, it is, but I don't call it one. I don't call it a healthy, intimate relationship where you're allowing somebody that you're married to, that you supposedly are in love with, to go out there and say, you know, baby, I won't be home tonight because I found this young dick that I want to suck on. So I'm glad that you understand, baby. So, you know, and she goes out there and does it, and he goes out there and does it. Nah, they're two weirdos. Okay, they can win all the Oscars they want, but they're weird.
Yeah, that part I agree. So, Sean Black, do you believe there should not be an open relationship in a marriage?
I think it depends on what's comfortable for the couple themselves. There are so many people that have different proclivities to whatever works for them. If that's what they communicate to each other, you've heard me say this before, if that's the reasoning why they do it, hey, if they want to get into a wrestling ring and have at it in the wrestling ring, that's for them. If they decide that's what's good for them and they're not harming anyone else or themselves, then hey.
Yeah, but in that case, what's the point getting married? There isn't marriage between two people. I'm about to say marriage.
You got to remember,
between two people?
A marriage,
is a union.
A relationship is between the two people involved. That's the contract between those two. And if the both of them decide that for their lifestyle, for themselves, that they want to introduce others into this marriage on whatever level it is, that is for them to decide and judge and no one else's. Now, me saying that, if you allow others from outside, especially if you are a celebrity, and I've said this before, if you are a celebrity and you are all over social media and you open up the curtains into your bedroom or into your private life, there's going to be a section of America that's going to peer into that window and think that they have rights to know everything, to import their opinions to everything, and into a lot of instances, to troll everything. Because there are people out there that just like to be trolls. And that's kind of goes with the territory.
True, and I think that's the problem. That's why everybody can talk about it. Like, listen, you open your talk show, telling the whole world about your business, about who you're sleeping with in your open relationship, or you have a problem with a mouth or cruel or bad joke about you. Isn't that a hypocrite?
If you know as a celebrity, the audience wants to be near you, they want to talk to you as close as they can to being that with that celebrity. Say, instance, you've seen different celebrities that say, I love my fans, I love my fan base, and I will do whatever I can to communicate. That's why back in the day they used to have fan clubs where you mail out a postcard and you'd be able to get a letter from your favorite celebrity or athlete or singer or whatever. Mm-hmm. Now we're in the age of social media where you can actually be part of a fan club, and literally within 5 seconds you could say something to or about a celebrity, and that same celebrity could respond back to you. So now because of that closeness in the social media realm and how interconnected we are in this world, every person that feels that they are a celebrity's biggest fan thinks that they have the opinions or the rights to everything that happens within that person's life, and they feel that they can judge that person based on the input that they give. So there has to be kind of a sort of a give and take. If you're going to announce certain things about your life on the air or in the medium of social media, you're going to have to expect that somebody, unless you're controlling the narrative, somebody is going to say something that you do not like, and you're going to probably have to be stronger than a lot of people. Even though they are just as human as everyone else, those are the kinds of risks that are taken when you reveal more about yourself than you probably are comfortable with.
And to Joe, there was another video from that night. From a camera phone of Jada laughing after the slap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, wait a minute, your husband just slapped another person in front of billions of people. I say billions, but around the world watched it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're laughing your ass off about it?
Well, you know, that's a woman's secret fantasy. Yeah, there will be women who will denounce Will Smith as being an aggressive guy, but secretly they love it. They want it. And some celebrities, right after the slap, they were talking about how terrific it was that a man defended his wife. That's their secret fantasy. That is one of the major reasons why women are attracted to men and marry the kind of men that they do. They want this hunter, protector, provider image. So
okay.
For him, I'm...
So in your opinion, I'm sorry, Joe, in your opinion, do you think Will Smith was defending his wife at that moment?
No, I think he was trying to restore his manhood. If he wanted to defend his wife, he had the opportunity to do it years ago when Chris Rock was ragging on him at the 2016 Oscars and on the David Letterman show and on other places.
But I think that's the problem. Even though that's a fantasy, it shows you right there that Jada controls this man. Well, you know what? That's their business. I don't care. But I think my problem with Jada was she did not do anything to defend Will or try to hold him back. Or maybe she didn't know that he was about to go up there and slap him. But she gave him the signal, you better do something about it or else, you know.
Well, that's what I think he did it as a response to her looking at him. I don't think that, I don't know if she, you know, gave him any kind of intimate signal that they only know that if you don't do something now, I'm fucking the butcher, this candlestick maker, and, you know, and your brother. So, I'm sure, you know, I feel that when she looked at him like, I didn't like this. And I, you know, especially when he was laughing at the joke, he says, I'm in the doghouse for the next 30 days. I better do something about it now. And goes up there and I agree with you. I think she controls him. I think she controls him.
Oh, yeah. But do you think Jenna was more upset about the joke or more that Will Smith was laughing at the joke?
Laughing at the joke.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's supposed
to be
her
part. And
that's
the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the problem. That's the problem right there.
Yeah.
Sean Black, what do you think?
I think that Will Smith was not standing up for Jada. Will Smith was standing up for Will Smith. I think his part of it was his ego was bruised. He's probably been going through a lot privately that nobody in the public knows about. We've heard people going back into the archives of his book and finding out that his mother was abused by his father, and he said that he saw things that he was 9 years old and saw his mother get punched by his father, and he said that he had that image in his head, and that part of him is still part. That is part of him still that he wrangles with. I don't know if that is a factor in who he has become, but what we've seen over the last few years, especially through social media and through some of the things that he's done and the things within his family, is that their lives seem to be an open book. And I think that in the court of public opinion, I think in Will's mind, there's probably something that goes along with how he's perceived and connecting it to maybe how he should be dealing with life in general. As
well,
you both have alluded to, it's a charge to his manhood. Maybe that's something that he's thinking about. We don't know.
But I think another problem with this whole situation that the world keeps talking about, Jim Carrey brought up a great point in the interview, which I oversaw it. I thought about it until he brought it up again, that the hypocrite of Hollywood. Hollywood was stunned to see this incident, and when he won best actor for the Oscar, and he gave a speech, and he apologized to everybody except to Chris Rock, people, he got a standing ovation. Isn't that a big hypocrite? I mean, wait a minute. You saw this man just basically assaulted another fellow friend, actor, comedian. And you're being rewarded with an actor and a standing ovation. And am I missing something over here? So Sean Bible always said, and he said this Monday night, you teach our kids, you know, what's right and wrong. When you do something wrong, bad things happen. We do something good, you get reward. Now, here you are, Will Smith, who got an award for best actor, his first one, he got a standing ovation as he slapped somebody. Not like 2 hours prior, maybe half an hour prior to the incident. Does that make any sense?
Well, the applause he was going to get anyway, because everybody gets applause when you win the Oscar. But What yes. he did get.
He got a standing ovation. A standing ovation he got.
Oh, he did? Oh, I didn't see that. Yes. I didn't know that.
Yes. He gave the speech. He apologized to the nominees, to the Academy, but not to Chris
that
Rock.
I saw, yeah.
He was crying, and he got standing ovation. I mean, the tears work because, you know, he's an actor, but besides that.
Yeah.
You know, this is how he get rewarded?
Well, like the standing ovation kind of surprises me. The ovation itself, the applause doesn't surprise me because everybody will get it once you're the winner. He got a lot of compliments though when he went to the after Oscars party. I hear that people went up to him and said, you know, congratulations on your win and how you defended your wife. So.
Yeah, and then that's a problem there. I have a problem with that. I mean, it's okay to defend your wife, but at the same time, there's a time and place for everything. I've cracked up jokes about Sean's wife, you know, he might get upset, but he will pull me to the side. Listen, I don't like the joke. Please have respect. I apologize. We move on, you know. If Sean Black will slap me backstage, not in front of millions of people, not in front of the camera, you know.
Yeah,
we don't know
and
Sean
even
Black,
more
not
so.
Slap me around. Go ahead.
To me, the worst, I'm going to let that one slide. But the worst part of that whole entire incident that happened, and I said this before on Monday's show, with all of the stuff that's there, for all of the implications that were around, for all of the potential criminality that could have happened and maybe the police could have done it, with all of that stuff, a couple of things came out. One is the fact that we are not talking about the actual good things that happened on the Oscars.
Yes.
As I brought it before, we had a first Latina ex openly gay actress win an Academy Award. Yes. We had the first ensemble deaf acting entourage and movie,
mm-hmm.
CODA, which is Children of Deaf Adults, was what CODA means.
Oh,
that was lost
wow.
completely in the entire definition of everything that was there and all of the feel-good things that happened that were first. Three women that hosted the Oscars, all of that was lost. Because now when anybody talks about the 2022 Oscars, the only thing that has been etched in anyone's mind is going to be Chris Rock getting slapped by Will Smith. And it adds that perpetuation, and that's the saddest part, because then this goes to the second part that I also alluded to, is that it also perpetuates the mindset that when you get two black people in public, this is the kind of thing that's going to happen. And that's also the perpetuation of those tropes that we always hear about on a regular basis, either in joking or just stereotypes of other people that bring those kinds of arguments up. And those are the kinds of things that will follow everyone around as long as this, because this is going to live on for years and years and years. We'll be talking about this 15 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what, to your point, Sean Black, you know, you have two black men in their high ranks, you know, not ghetto, and they crack up jokes, you can't take the ghetto out of the, you know, you can't take the ghetto out of the kid or something like that, you know. It's like, look at these black guys. They're ghetto, you know. And we're talking about Will Smith and Chris Rock, not two rappers, two guys that came from Brownsville, Brooklyn, New York. Two guys who have Oscars, Emmys, movies, everything underneath their belts. And look what happened. And with 10 minutes, I'd like to add
rich. That's the other thing you got to add. This can't be said, because this is also a class issue. The reason why Will Smith had been getting a pass from a lot of people for what you said about defending his wife's honor is because of who he is, because of the cachet of cred that he has, because he is safe.
He's a good,
people
he's
know
a money
who
maker.
Will Smith is. He has,
yeah.
Exactly. He's a moneymaker. He has a brand that people, not only white but black, at the time they know. They've seen his movies. They listen to his music. They know what he has done and who he is. And Chris Rock has the same type of cash, the same cachet of reputation, great actor, great comedian. He's done things in the community. The problem is if this was, say, Mike Tyson slapping Chris Rock, or if this was somebody else in the same situation but different class look as far as the perception of who did the slapping and who was the recipient of the slap. Or I'll give you even better. What if the person that did the slapping was O.J. Simpson, who we all know in media times throughout the entire media is a pariah and deservedly so. If it was O.J. Simpson that did the slapping on Chris Rock, do you think we would be hearing a lot of the same stuff that we heard in defense of Will Smith up until all of the other stuff came out during the week?
No.
And that proves my point of where I'm coming from.
Here's another point I'm going to dovetail off of Sean about. What if the person who was receiving the slap was Michael Jaleel White? Do you think Will Smith would have gotten out of his chair to go and fight the guy? No.
If it was Michael Jai White, he would have sat in the chair and he would have continued laughing, and that would have been it. And that also proves my point.
But once again, we all know and we all agree there's something more personal going on between them. There could be some beef that we don't know about. Is everything, like you guys said, boiled up for Will Smith to his emotion was rising for him to blow up, because it made no sense in your right mind for you to get up in front of millions of people watching live to take action. There's no reason.
And
for Jada not to hold her man back or reprimand him, she's guilty as well as Will Smith. And like sadly to say, Chris Rock is truly the victim in this. Whether you like his joke or not, whether you agree his joke was overboard or whatever, he was truly the victim, and he played his card right. But people are like, oh, if that was me, I would have my hands up and get ready to fight Will Smith. Chris didn't know that he was about to get slapped. You know?
No, he didn't know
if
that.
If he did.
He didn't know that.
Exactly. Because you could tell that he was shocked, you know, in his speeches. He cracked up a joke or two, but he was still like, did Will Smith really just slap the crap out of me? That just really happened
here's
in front of the camera?
Here's the other thing to kind of dissect body language. And like I said, I'm not a psychologist or anything like that, but just looking at body language.
Yeah, right.
Everybody looked at Chris Rock when Will Smith got on stage, and everybody looked at how Chris Rock kind of leaned forward. He probably was leaning forward to probably tell Will, it was just a joke. I was just joking. You know how some people, they lean forward so they can whisper something a little bit. And that's what I think Chris Rock was trying to do before he got slapped. So everybody that's sitting here thinking that, oh, this whole thing was staged or whatever was the case, if this was staged, both of them are going to look like complete idiots. But I sincerely doubt that that's the case. I think it's safe to say that we know that this was not staged. And I think this is now a teachable lesson. The sad part about that is it's once again a teachable lesson at the expense of two African-American entertainers that did not have to be in the situation to begin with.
So to Crazy Joe, do you think they should take the Oscar away from Will Smith, or some type of action should be taking place?
Well, hot dog, let me think about this. I also heard that they had asked him to leave. He said no. Then I heard that they had condemned him.
They didn't lie about that. They say they lie about that part. That part seems to be a lie.
Oh, yeah? Oh, okay.
Basically, what they're saying is that he wasn't told to leave. It was suggested that he leave, and then he refused to leave. That's what the whole thing was.
And they left it alone. The cat, they're trying to, you know, cover their asses right now. Like, oh, yeah, we tried to tell him to leave, but he refused to leave, you know. It's like, really? He should have been escorted out of the building, no matter who that person was, you know.
Well, yeah.
You know, I guess they don't want to do a big scene or whatever. But let's be honest,
I agree with
you. It was just you and me. It was you and me, a regular person. We'd be thrown out the building. Not escorted, thrown out of the building.
Put it like this. If it was you or I, once we got out of the seat, there would have been security to escort us out. There would not have been a wait till I get on stage. It wouldn't have gotten to that point.
I don't know about that, and I know where you're coming from with that, Sean, because there's supposed to be security there. But see, it wasn't a concert. It wasn't a venue where you have a lot of rowdy people. Because when you have concerts, you have the security right then and there. They're there to watch anybody language, anybody coming up to the stage, and they're there to make sure if they don't get within a, 5 feet of the stage, if possible. But in a venue like this, there's never been any kind of violence. I'm sure there's security there. But they've probably been told, stay out of sight of the cameras, and they sure as hell don't expect anybody to come up on stage like that, because it's not it's not music. It's all about words. It's all about making a presentation. So I don't blame security for not getting a hold of them right away, you know.
And to be honest,
but I know your point, though.
Yeah, but no, there've been actors in the past that walked up the stage, either to hug the presenters or crack up a joke. You know, it happens all the time. So when they saw Will Smith, okay, he's probably to come say a joke or do something funny. But that's what they normally do. Okay, with 3 minutes left, real quickly, Shaw Black, we're going back to wrestling. The main event is Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns. Who do you think going to win before we sign off?
I have a distinct feeling that Roman is going to win. I think that Vince is trying as best as he can to make sure that Roman continues to hold on to this record as long as possible. We also know that Vince looks at Roman Reigns as his cash cow. He's developed his character into the character that Vince has been wanting to push, and let's really be honest, Roman has been this good for well over a year now. He's approaching a year and a half at this level. I don't see this ending anytime soon, and we know because of the way Brock has been presented, where he's in and out. He's not a full-time wrestler, and then he takes his time off. I don't think it would make any sense unless they plan on keeping him there for a longer run that this is going to be anything but a Roman Reigns coronation, so to speak.
I disagree. I think it will be Brock Lesnar that is going to win, because Brock will kill Roman Reigns because the man is on fire and he is a beast. And Joe, if I was you, I know you don't watch wrestling anymore, but WrestleMania is this Saturday and Sunday. You should watch Sunday night and just watch the main event. That might change your mind to watch wrestling again.
I would watch Brock Lesnar in the MMA, even though they appointed him as the heavyweight champion after only 5 fights, but he got his ass kicked a couple of times. He wasn't he showed that he couldn't fight. He could certainly wrestle well, but he couldn't fight. I want to know before we leave, what did you guys talk about on Monday, and what are you guys going to talk about next Monday?
Monday we talk about Will Smith, and we never Will Smith is something else. I can't remember. That was so long ago. I can't remember these days, But we was waiting for you. And damn, Sean, what did we talk about? Was Will Smith and something relationship?
We're talking about Will Smith.
I forgot.
We talked about Ke'Dangi Brown Jackson. And what the next time that we do have our show, the one thing that we didn't have enough time to actually get to is we're going to talk about the Suns owner, Robert Sarver, who is, without question, on a Donald Sterling role that
I was about
the
to
media
ask,
hasn't really talked much about.
I was going
to
ask that.
You're going to have to tune into our next show to be able to get to hear about that. So.
Yeah, because I don't know this guy. Hot dog.
Crazy Joe, Sean Black, thank you so much, guys. Have a good night.
You got it.
Stay blessed and take care.
Yep, I'll see you
next time. The pleasure was all yours.
It certainly was.
Good night.